everybody. Welcome to episode 566 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Justice League spotlight on Justice League number 10. It's the prelude to the Drowned Earth storyline. We've got this prelude, and then it spills over into Aquaman number 41, which is a tie-in. And there's another tie-in in Titans 28, and the event itself begins in earnest in the Aquaman Justice League Drowned Earth number 1, which is out on Halloween, so this coming Wednesday. So let me give the creative team really fast before I dive into the synopsis for the issue. It's written by Scott Snyder. We have art, colors, and inks by Francis Manapole. The letters are by Tom Napolitano. Francis Manapole also does the cover, and then there's a variant cover, which has Aquaman himself on it solo, by Jim Lee, Scott Williams, and Alex Sinclair, so Jim Lee's regular collaborators. I hope, before I get into the synopsis here, I hope that you all had a chance to listen to the interview I did with Scott Snyder a couple of weeks ago about the Justice League Drowned Earth storyline. We talked about a few other things as well, Witching Hour, and just how personal working on Justice League is for Scott. But the main focus of the interview was this Justice League Drowned Earth storyline and how much fun Scott's having working on it. You know, supposedly the best Batman line, the funniest Batman line he's ever read. Hashtag We Are Jaro, which is absolutely amazing. A little shard of Starro that's survived and Batman keeps in a jar for his purposes. That's called Jaro, which is just really, really awesome. We get a glimpse of him in this issue as well. And Scott also talked in the interview about how in each of these arcs of Justice League, he's really taking a few of the Justice League members and focusing on them heavily. So in the first issue or first arc, it was somewhat an examination of Martian Manhunter and particularly Jon Stewart, a little bit of Flash. And in the second arc, this big event here of Drowned Earth, it's really taking a look at Aquaman and Wonder Woman, who we've sort of seen paired up since the beginning of Scott's Justice League run. And I really like that combination because Aquaman and Wonder Woman are both so much more than just humans, right? Like Wonder Woman herself is a demigod. She's an Amazonian. She's, you know, so much more than just your average person beyond being just super powered, right? Like take away her superpowers, but if she has that same heritage, she's still, you know, isn't your everyday normal human, right? And Aquaman's the same. He's half human. He's half Atlantean. He's a king. And again, he's so much more than just what his superpowers are. You know, he's always borne the responsibility of being king of Atlantis, but feeling out of place various times in his history. Different factions haven't accepted him. And he's been in sort of a tough position at various times, right? Because again, he is, you know, half human, half Atlantean, and in a way doesn't belong to either world because both worlds reject him, right? Like the surface world says, no, you're Atlantean, we can't trust you, go away. And for on the Atlantean's part, they're saying, well, you're supposed to be our king, technically you're heir to the throne, but we can't trust you because you're of the surface. And we can't trust the surface world. So there's always been this sense and this kind of shadow or cloud hovering over Aquaman that he's never been able to really belong. And that that's in contrast to, or even in addition to, I guess I should say, to the fact that so many people have rejected him as just not a very interesting or powerful character, when in fact, when you think about it, in order to withstand the oceanic depths that Aquaman is able to withstand, he would have to have tremendous stamina and fortitude, and to be able to swim in water that's under that pressure, he would have to be just ridiculously strong, not to mention the fact that you know, he has this telepathic ability to influence marine life, which is, you know, if that was the only power he had, that would be extremely powerful. So the fact of the matter is, he is one of the most powerful members of the Justice League. And I think in the New 52 Aquaman series from Geoff Johns with art by Yvonne Reese, that really kind of got fleshed out. And we started to kind of see a new side of Aquaman, that he really was so much more than he had been in the past. Now, typically, DC does a great job of keeping the comics and the film separate, in as much as you don't usually see the look of something in the comic, or the look of something in the film, rather, reflected in the comic. Unfortunately, that's not so much the case with Aquaman. He's gone from having, you know, the short hair and the clean shaven that we had seen when, even when the Rebirth Aquaman started, to having the long hair and the beard. Even though his hair is still blonde, I can't help but think maybe this has something to do with kind of the Jason Momoa look of Aquaman. Now, I'm a huge Jason Momoa fan. Let me get that out of the way right off the bat. Loved him from the first time I ever saw him in anything, which was Stargate Atlantis. You know, ironically enough, right? He's playing Aquaman. He was in Stargate Atlantis. I don't know if anybody's ever... I mean, I'm sure someone else has made that connection, but that's just so coincidental. I mean, it's 100% coincidental, but it's still interesting and fun to think about, right? But anyway, obviously, I never really cared for his look as Aquaman. I'm fine with the casting, and you know, we've seen him at various times be clean shaven, not a lot, but there's been a few roles where he's been clean shaven, and I think he looks great. But for whatever reason, with Aquaman, they went the dark haired, scruffy look, and you know, I'm just not a fan of it. It's something that's completely superficial and whatever, but I could probably live with one or the other, right? So if he had the darkish hair and he was clean shaven, I'd be okay with it. They want him to have the long hair and be scruffy, but it was a lighter color, I'd be okay with it. But the fact that it's dark and he's scruffy, I don't know. I don't particularly care for the look. Now, that being said, I did enjoy him in the Justice League film. But you've got to kind of take it for what it is, which is not the Aquaman from the New 52 Geoff Johns run at all, and not very much like the Rebirth Aquaman either. He's the Justice League, the DC Extended Universe Aquaman is very much his own kind of character and thing. So I'm not sure why we're going with the long hair and the beard for Aquaman currently in the Justice League title. So, you know, I guess it's fine. It's not the end of the world, but I hope that it's not a trend, right, to start making these heroes look like they look in the movies. So let me go ahead and dive into Justice League 10, and then I may have a little bit more to say about Aquaman himself in at the end, and I just comment on some of the things that Scott himself said in the interview from last week. So the issue starts out. We're in Amnesty Bay. It's a flashback. It's Arthur Curry, Aquaman, on a fishing boat with his father, talking about how he wants to go fish this cove that they supposedly haven't fished before. It's a new cove. And his father tells him, you know, that's just a trick of the light that makes it look new, but we've fished that one before. And Arthur's like, well, aren't there any new places that we haven't fished? You know, I want it to be like the old days when sailors were explorers and they didn't know what they would find. And his father says, well, you know, all the waters are mapped and numbered. You know, in fact, all of Earth's oceans are. There aren't really very many surprises left. So Arthur's response is, there've got to be new oceans out there somewhere, right? And as we turn the page, the scene shifts to the Arctic Circle. Arthur Aquaman is holding a ship in a bottle, and it's the ship in a bottle that we saw Poseidon holding when Cheetah killed Poseidon. And supposedly this ship in the bottle comes to life whenever it's close to the source of Poseidon's power, so to speak. And they're not sure what that means, other than the fact that the ship in the bottle bears the mark of Arion, who was the greatest of Atlantis's heroes, who Scott mentions in the interview as well. And they think that Poseidon sent the ship in the bottle to them to look for the resting place of these ancient ships that have disappeared. And it's this so the ship in the bottle has led them to the Arctic, and they're wondering just where this ship is, right? Because as I said, the ship in the bottle is going to come alive whenever it's close to its source. So the Aquaman and Wonder Woman are joined by Firestorm, who we haven't really seen in this new Justice League title yet. I'm not really sure what version of Firestorm this is, but it is good to see him. He's a character that I've always enjoyed. So they're in the Arctic, as I said. They managed to find the ship they're looking for, but not only do they find that ship, but there are a lot of other ships as well. Galleons and submarines are all of different eras, and Aquaman wonders aloud why all these ships are there. What were they hunting for? And Wonder Woman speculates that perhaps they were hunting for the same thing that Aquaman and Firestorm and Wonder Woman themselves are looking for, right? And Aquaman says there's a legend that he never really believed in, but the legend is that the key to the graveyard of the gods is in the belly of an ancient ship that was locked away by Poseidon. And Wonder Woman's like, "What graveyard of the gods? What's that?" And Aquaman tells her it's where all the slain or forgotten gods go. It's kind of their Hades. And they figured that when Poseidon was killed, he just switched hosts, right? He just switched to another body. Now, we know that not to be the case because of the tears of, I can't remember what they're called exactly, but these special artifact that Cheetah basically used to kind of paint her talons that basically allowed her to kill Poseidon for good. So as Firestorm unleashes the ship or you know, frees it from the ice, Aquaman, or Wonder Woman rather, saying that their enemies have been able to unlock more energies or forces, if you will. And if they have the power to kill and resurrect gods, that it may very well be that they're getting a lot more powerful. So as they're unearthing this ship they finally found, Batman calls in wondering if they've been able to find Poseidon. Is their search hot or cold? And Aquaman's response is, well, Batman, we're at once very cold and very hot. And as we turn the page, the scene shifts to Veracity Island, where Adam Strange and Superman and Flash are fighting against these lava men that are erupting from the Lava Man, who appears to be deceased but spawning all these other kind of mini versions of himself. And apparently they've been looking for the Hall of Doom, the Legion of Doom base, and they've been unable to find it, but they do see Trail, and Adam Strange is talking about the fact that whatever the headquarters is made out of, it seems to be phasable energy, like Zeta beams. So it can be someplace and also not be there at the same time. So it's kind of shifting through dimensions, if you will. They also detect a launch trail. Something was fired deep into space. It seems like some kind of beacon. And Batman has the coordinates, and he's trying to check it out. Meanwhile, Superman's worried about Batman and asks how he's doing. And Batman's like, "Why wouldn't I be doing okay?" And Superman's response is, "Well, you're in a full body cast, you know, because all your legs and arms were broken." And Batman's like, "No, I'm fine. Totality's secure. We're running analysis of this beam or this beacon rather, and you know, we'll find out where it's headed." And Batman says, "Well, it seems to be aimed at an abandoned hunk of alien anthozoa, which is basically coral, some kind of cosmic barrier wreath." And Flash wants to call Green Lantern to see if he knows anything about it. Green Lantern, John Stewart, but unfortunately, John Stewart, Hawkman, and Martian Manhunter cross the gravity well of Thanagar Prime to try to find answers about the totality. So they're unable to be reached right now. Meanwhile, Batman's talking about trying to extract more information from Will Patton Brain, Starman, who showed up a few issues ago with a warning about the totality. But it seems like almost half his brain has been, or mind has been erased. And Superman comments that he's even been using Jaro, who is my new favorite Justice League character. It's just a little mini Starro in a jar. Goes by the name of Jaro. It's just perfect. Hashtag we are Jaro. So he mentions that he's been using more, or he's been using Jaro to try to find more memories, but he hasn't been that successful. And meanwhile, Aquaman and Wonder Woman say, "Hey, we've found the ship. The reason it was so hard to find was ice around it. Literally, the molecules of it were bound with some magic, making it reflective to all kinds of energy. So it couldn't be found through a conventional search. You literally have to go out there and physically find it." So Firestorm asks who Arion is, and Aquaman gives him a quick synopsis about the fact that he was the greatest hero Atlantis ever knew. And at one point, Arion was the leader of Atlantis before it sank. And he, with Poseidon's help, built a clarion. It was kind of a cosmic conch shell, if you will. And it was used to call from across the cosmos to other planets that were filled with ocean life. And there were some divine beings that answered that, but there were also invaders that answered. And there was a great war. And Orion himself was able to build some defenses for Atlantis. And with the help of these divine beings, was able to fight off the invasion. But the dream and the vision of what an ocean stands for, it kind of changed after that, right? And Atlantis was entrenched ever since that, and it really kind of changed things. And Aquaman himself has always thought that perhaps he should be out there looking for that dream that Arion kind of started, right? Like the belief of finding something out there, finding the unknown, finding something that matters, being a mariner, as Aquaman puts it, which is really his way of saying being an explorer, right? Being a, you know, we saw in the first couple pages him on his father's boat talking about being an explorer, finding oceans that are unknown, and that he feels there's worth in that. So Aquaman goes on to say, "With the source wall broken, Poseidon dead, shores closing in on all of us, water's growing dark, it really doesn't seem like it's the time to be a mariner, right? Like things seem pretty bleak right now." So as they're examining the ship, Wonder Woman notices that the carving right above Arion's head, it looks like wood, but it's actually an Amazonian ally. So when Arthur breaks through, they find a strange-looking key, and Aquaman wonders aloud if it could be the key to the graveyard of the gods. But before they can speculate any further, they're attacked by a space kraken. And as Firestorm's looking at it, he's saying, "Batman, are you seeing what I'm seeing? That the molecules of this thing are transformative. If it touches anything living..." And before he can continue, he's actually touched by some of the water that this thing spews out and falls into the sea, and Aquaman jumps in after him. But before he can reach him, Firestorm turns, and he's been transformed into some kind of aquatic monster. The Kraken then manages to grab hold of Aquaman, and there's a whirlpool comes out of its mouth. It opens up a portal, and it looks like it traps both Wonder Woman and Aquaman, but on the next page, all we see is Aquaman. He's talking to three beings who are riding giant seahorses, and they're welcoming him to the Blood Reef. And they introduce themselves as the triumvirate of sea gods, Captain Gall, Commander Drogue, and Fleet Admiral Tide. So Drogue says, "Just as Poseidon was ocean deity to your galaxy, these three are the ocean deities to other galaxies. And they've come here from the far reaches of space, and they've brought a few other ocean-dwelling races with them." And they say, we're just here to answer the beacon, just as we journeyed here once before when your great hero Arion called to us from Earth long ago. So Aquaman assumes these are those benevolent gods that were summoned and helped fight off the invaders. And so he says, let me welcome you. Now that you're here, you know, maybe we can form a new union. We, you know, the source wall's broken. Could really use your help. And they kind of smack Aquaman down. And Aquaman's like, I don't understand. If you're the gods who answered Arion's call and helped to defeat the invaders in the Great War, like, what are you doing? And they start laughing and saying, we are the invaders. As we speak, a fleet of our warships approach Earth, and they're going to form a blockade to make sure no one comes and helps. And we are going to drown the entire Earth. There is no escape. So Batman calls out to all the Justice Leaguers, saying the Earth is under attack. Aquaman tries to persuade these three sea deities that the entire universe is in peril. Oceans, those that dwell in the oceans and not. And the three don't want to listen. They say, you know, there's a saying, a fool waits on the shore for the tide to bring greetings when all it's ever brought is war. And they're like, that's why we brought you here. So you can watch from the blood reef as your planet drowns. And Drogue then sends a flood to drown the Earth. So it's this purplish liquid that's not really water. And whenever it touches anyone, they are transformed in an instant to the, you know, the fish monsters, just like Firestorm was. So Superman's yelling, come in, Batman. Do you know what's going on? And there's literally no escape as we see the Hall of Justice being flooded as well, with Flash saying, whoever they are, they flooded the whole coast in minutes. And Superman's response is, it's not just the coast, Flash, it's the whole damn world. So, as I said, this continues into Aquaman 41 and Titans 28, and then we get the beginning of the whole event proper in Aquaman Justice League Drowned Earth number 1, which is out on Halloween. So I really like how important and impactful and tied into Aquaman this next part of the story is that Scott Snyder and the rest of the creative team is telling. I wonder how much of this was, or possibly was, part of the Earth One Aquaman story, because I think it was 3 years ago, I think it was San Diego 2015, that Dan Didio announced that Francis Manapul was going to be doing an Aquaman Earth One story, you know, or Earth One being some more grounded, standalone, sort of more realistic stories. We've had three volumes of Superman Earth One. We've had two volumes of Batman Earth One. We've had two volumes of Wonder Woman Earth One. We've had a Teen Titans and a Green Lantern. So I'm not, you know, highly anticipating, because I think Francis's art very much suits some underwater kind of scenes very well. But now we're getting him working on the Justice League Drowned Earth instead, which again, it's Aquaman, it's aquatic, so I think his art is exceptional for that. It's not quite what I expected, though, or quite what I think of when I think, okay, it's aquatic, it's underwater, it's Aquaman, it's going to be great, because this isn't technically water, it's like alien water, you know, it's water that's transformative, but I still think a lot of the same principles apply. But again, I just wonder if that Aquaman Earth One from Francis is still in the works, or if part of it was taken for the story, or what the deal is there. But I think that it's a great time to focus on Aquaman, because, again, to reference the Scott Snyder interview that we did a couple weeks ago, this what happens in this arc and what happens in this storyline, I think very much is going to inform where Kelly Sue DeConnick takes the character when she takes over Aquaman. I think the first issue comes out in January. So I don't know if Aquaman's going to be disillusioned with what happens. You know, again, I encourage you to go check out Aquaman 41 from Dan Abnett. There's kind of what the consequences of what happens to Atlantis in that issue. And it really focuses on Mira as well, which I think is really great, because that's immediately what you think of, right? When you think of, okay, water, attack, it's going to have something to do, like, what's Atlantis's role in all this? Are they going to be able to you know, survive or help or kind of what's their status. And so I really found that issue of Aquaman 41 to be really great as well. But again, the fact that Aquaman has left Mira in charge of Atlantis, he's turned his throne over to her. She's the one who's kind of guiding Atlantis right now. It does leave it open for Kelly Sue to tell whatever kind of story about Aquaman that she wants to. And it's pretty interesting to hear some of the things that she's said about Aquaman, because I did mention myself about how Aquaman is of both worlds, accepted by neither, doesn't really feel like he's part of either. And it's been that whole kind of fish out of water kind of status quo that Aquaman has had for the last, I don't know, 20 or 30 years, it seems like. It's been a long time. And what Kelly Sue, the point that she's made in a few interviews and at a few conventions where she's been on panels, is that it's time to move on from that, right? Like, that's been done. So what comes next as an evolution to the character? Because for as old as Aquaman is, and you know, this goes kind of for Hawkman too, which is great what Robert Venditti's currently doing with Hawkman. We're finally getting a definitive run that explains who Hawkman is and who he has been all along, which is incorporating a lot of the previous versions of Hawkman. So if Kelly Sue can do that with Aquaman, can we finally get a good take on Aquaman, like a quintessential take, like a take where if anybody ever wants to read Aquaman, like you point to this run or this story or this title, like if you want to know who Aquaman is, here's like pinnacle of him. Here's the title that explains it, right? It sums him up as a character, the quintessential Aquaman run. Whether or not Kelly Sue's going to be able to do that or not is a whole nother story. I know that she's planning on incorporating some of the aspects of godhood and deities in there, which is great. You know, the new gods are so kind of at the forefront of everybody's mind right now with the incredible Mr. Miracle title from Tom King and Mitch Gerrits. But there hasn't been much, which always surprises me, there hasn't been much done in the DC universe with the old gods, or not enough, I feel like. And the stuff that has been done has felt kind of stuffy and hasn't really worked, at least not for me. So if Kelly Sue can incorporate an interesting Aquaman tale into tales of the old gods and what the old gods have been and what they are, I think that's perfect. So I was actually planning on asking Scott during the interview how much of what happens here, being that this Drowned Earth storyline is really going to focus on exploring Aquaman and Wonder Woman and who those characters are to him, to Scott himself, like how is that going to dovetail into what Kelly Sue is doing? And before I could even ask the question, Scott was already off and running with it, talking about how this really sets up what's going to happen to Aquaman in the future. So I think Kelly Sue's a great writer. There's a little bit of me that feels the same way I felt when Brian Michael Bendis took over Action from Dan Jurgens. It's like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Like, why are you taking Dan Jurgens off of Action Comics and giving it to Brian Michael Bendis when Dan Jurgens has been doing such a good job? I kind of feel like that about Aquaman and Kelly Sue as well, just because Dan Abnett has been absolutely killing it, but he may be ready to move on. I don't know. Or it may just be time for a little bit of a different voice. Again, I am a fan of Kelly Sue. This is her first DC work, so I'm excited for that as well. I hope that they're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak, because again, what Dan Abnett has been doing on the title has been so, so amazing. But again, I'm all for having a quintessential, prototypical look at who Aquaman is as a character, because again, as much as I'm loving what Dan Abnett is doing, I don't know that I could call it a quintessential take on Aquaman, right? Like I don't think you could give Dan Abnett's run of Aquaman to anybody and have them read it without knowing anything about the character and have it feel like, okay, I understand who he is now. Like, it's a great run, but I feel like you kind of need some context to understand what's going on in the rest of the DC universe in order to understand Aquaman. in that context. Whereas I think, or I hope, that Kelly Sue, when we look at her run, we're like, yes, this is, you don't need to read any Aquaman that's come before this. You don't need to read any Aquaman that's come after this. Like, if you want to understand who Aquaman is as a character and, you know, his internal struggle, then this is the book you need to read. And the fact that she has specifically said it's not about the whole fish out of water thing makes me very curious to see where she's going to go, because that's been such a huge part of the character for so long. And that's where a lot of his conflict comes from, or where a lot of the drama comes from. And within that lives a lot of the story. So you take that away, you still have to have, you know, conflict and drive and some kind of drama to draw from to tell the story. So very curious what happens. But before that, we have to have this Drowned Earth storyline. And what's interesting about that is the whole, you know, the opening sequence that Scott Snyder put in with Arthur as a young child, always wanting to be the Mariner, right? Always wanting to be on the search for something. And part of that nature that he has, part of his who he is as a person, is that desire to be out there exploring and searching and experiencing new horizons and new worlds and new oceans to explore. That part of his character is part of the reason that he doesn't work as King of Atlantis. He has that restlessness in him. He has that wandering spirit where he wants to be out there. And that's not really what a king does, right? A king is responsible for his people. And I think at times he's kind of chafed under the mantle of being King of Atlantis. So it's great that right there from the very beginning of the Drowned Earth storyline, Scott Snyder is putting that in on the first page to help us understand, look, Aquaman is a hero. He understands his responsibilities, but he's also an individual who does yearn for exploration and freedom to some extent. And of course, he has a strong sense of responsibility, not just to Atlantis, but to all of planet Earth. And he's going to do everything he can to save us in this situation with these aliens coming in to drown the planet. But at the end of the day, he is still an explorer. He still has that desire to explore. So he's faced with something new now, like maybe be careful what you wish for. And I can't wait to see just how he approaches that and approaches, because he may be the only one who can stop it, because he's the only one up there on the Blood Reef with these other aquatic deities, if you will, from these other parts of the galaxy. So we haven't gotten a whole lot of characterization or a whole lot of understanding about Wonder Woman in the story yet, because as I did mention, Scott told us that this arc is really exploring both Aquaman and Wonder Woman. So I would expect in Justice League 11 to get a lot of Wonder Woman kind of stuff, which is kind of interesting in its own right because of what James Tynion is doing over in The Witching Hour right now. But we have a little time before that wraps up. That actually wraps up on Halloween as well. And then obviously this Drowned Earth storyline is going to extend beyond that. So again, there's a lot more details about Drowned Earth and what to expect, even a few spoilers if you go back and listen to that Scott Snyder interview. So I really encourage you all to do that. Meanwhile, I'm just absolutely loving what Scott and the rest of the creative team is doing on Justice League. Scott has completely managed to make this the central book of the DC Universe in a very, very short period of time, which is where Justice League really needs to live. And when it shines, being a central part of the DC Universe and feeling big and bombastic, and these events within a series, which is, you know, what Geoff Johns talked about doing, and in fact did with the Darkseid War along with Jason Fabok in the Justice League title for the New 52, where they were talking about doing the Darkseid War as an event, and then they said, no, you know, let's do it in Justice League. There's no reason to make the readers buy this big event crossover thing. Let's just do it within Justice League. It's really a Justice League story at its heart. And that's where it should live. And it's the same thing with Drowned Earth. This is a Justice League story at its heart, and it definitely should live in the pages of Justice League. And like I said, I can't wait to see where it goes from here. I'm very anxious to see what Wonder Woman's role in the story is going to be, and seeing her relationship with Aquaman develop further, and also see Aquaman come into his own. I mean, it's interesting. He could come into his own and come out of this series or this event better than he's been in a long time, with kind of some confidence in himself that he was able to overcome. Or it could completely flip, and he could come out of the series feeling, or out of the event rather, feeling kind of defeated and lost, even if the Earth prevails and they're able to stop the drowning of the Earth. If it doesn't go the right way, or Arthur doesn't feel like he helped in the right way, he easily could be kind of left on the sidelines at the end and almost broken in a way, which I kind of expect the story to go more in that direction, only because then it gives Kelly Sue a chance to pick up the broken pieces of this hero and put him back together again in a way that we all can appreciate and recognize. And it allows her to tell her Aquaman story with the parts of Aquaman that she finds most interesting and most wants to explore. And again, the goal here, or the hope that I would have for Kelly Sue, is that once this ends, that it's a classic era for Aquaman, a quintessential run, you know, just like George Perez on Wonder Woman, or Frank Miller on Batman, or John Byrne on Superman. We'll be talking about Kelly Sue DeConnick's run on Aquaman. That's what I hope for the character. So again, Drowned Earth, whole lot of fun. It feels menacing. It feels impactful. I particularly enjoyed Aquaman 41 rather, with the writing from Dan Abnett and the art from Lan Medina, with Mira dealing with Atlantis basically starting to be flooded by these waters. It was an incredible issue, and I highly encourage you to go and pick up that crossover if you haven't already. But what Francis and Scott and Tom Napolitano have managed to do in Justice League 10 is just create a really dangerous narrative that's fun to read and feels epic and cosmic, and I'm just having so much fun with Justice League. You know, last thing I'll mention about it, and Scott and I talked about this as well, is when you think about humans and the last two kind of final frontiers they have to still explore and don't understand fully. Obviously, space and the galaxy and the universe and all that, and we have three Justice Leaguers out there right now: Martian Manhunter, Hawkgirl, and John Stewart. But you also have back here on Earth, maybe the last place on Earth that's left to be really explored, because we just don't have the technology to get down there, and that's deep in the oceans, right? So I love that the Justice League title, so far, has been a lot of focus on those two areas. Either you're out in space, or you're exploring under the water and the dangers that exist there. And now we're even about to be forced to explore waters that aren't even of Earth. And these fish monsters that used to be human obviously just can't go around giving them the smackdown. It's going to be an interesting decision for the league and to see where they go next after this first issue of Drowned Earth. So again, I really recommend it. Justice League 10. It was a whole heck of a lot of fun. So read that, read Aquaman 41, read Titans 28, all before Halloween, so you can pick up the Aquaman Justice League Drowned Earth number one special and be right there keeping up with the rest of us with what's going on for Drowned Earth. So once again, I want to thank everybody for listening. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially reviews on Apple. The podcast past episodes are all available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming TV and movies. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. Don't forget, I'm going to be at LA Comic Con tomorrow, Saturday, October 27th. I'll be on the Superman 80th anniversary panel at noon in room 304, so check me out there. Other than that, I'll just be walking around the convention, talking to creators, and maybe even do a little bit of shopping. So if you're going to be there and you want to meet up and tell me what you like about the show, or maybe even what you don't like, get a quick selfie with me, or get a free Comic Source lanyard, any of that stuff, just hit me up on social media. I'll be checking it all day throughout the show. Again, I'm only going to be there Saturday, so hope to run into a few of you listeners there. So once again, I want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.